As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that vocal shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome in to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Growlin' Paul Ehringer Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are excited to be with you on a beautiful Tuesday morning here. And how are we doing?
I am excited, but I'm also a little sad. I just got the email about my NFL Survivor pool, and I thought I would double my chances this year and do two entries. The Bengals and Titans both lost. I'm done after 1 week of the Survivor pool.
You went Titans?
I never go road teams in early in the season. And the Titans and the Bengals were the biggest home favorites. Steelers were my best bet against the spread. I thought that was a lock, but I really did think the Bengals were going to win. So, dumb me.
I'm not going to get in the Titans, but I still stand by the fact that it just feels like bad things are about to happen in Tennessee, and maybe that was the start of it. But this is not a Titans podcast, and nor is it for us to bemoan Jay's failures and how side pools have gone sideways. We've got a lot to talk about, and we're going to get into, of course, the state of the Bengals offensive line. Yay, right? Like we never talk about it enough. It's like it really needs to be its own standing thing at this point. It pretty much will be probably until everybody feels like it's fixed. But I think there's new stuff has come to light. There's a lot of new information, I think, with Sunday's game, and I think the Bengals coaching staff's reaction to it is interesting and worth diving further into, which I have done in a piece that will be up in a little bit later today. But we can talk about that here. So there's a lot of fun offensive line conversation, which is just on brand with you know, following the Bengals at this point.
New and improved offensive line. So they allegedly.
So special teams. Also, how is special teams going forward? What is the assessment of what the heck went wrong? A lot to get to there. We'll do that. Mo Egger will join us, of course. We will bring in our best bets with him and talk a little bit about long range concerns. What is the big picture concern that he has to take away? And then we'll talk about that. We'll have our Arby's. Any related Bengals insight, extras, and stories. We will bring in your questions. Thanks, everybody that's watching on YouTube. What's going on? Good to see you over there. If you want to have anything you want to drop into the comments, please do. If you have questions, we'll get to some at the end. So if you have questions that you want us to answer, just drop them into the comments section, and we will do a little Q&A at the end of the podcast. And you never know. Maybe we'll spark the idea that we had yesterday, which is the I Have No Shame segment of Jay Morrison telling a story from his 20s or 30s or 40s, or maybe it happened last week.
I have a no shame Bengals Steelers story, actually. So I think I've told it before, but we can revisit it.
Well, then we will. So stick around to the end of the podcast for Jay's I Have No Shame Bengals Steelers story, which I'm here for any time those pop up. All right. Let's start off with a little bit of news real quick. Not a ton of news. Clark Harris to the IR, which was as expected. Cal Adamitis up from the PS, which is what was expected. You know, the competition between Cal and Clark was tight through most of camp, and we didn't know for sure until the end whether they were going to who was going to win it. Ended up being Clark Harris, but that is over now. It is the torn bicep on Clark Harris. He says he's not retiring.
No,
this is not going to be the end for him. Clark has admitted to me he wants to be the oldest player in the NFL, and I want to see it happen for him because that's just a cool goal to have. He also wanted to lead the league in the person that downs the ball when a punt just rolls and sits there the most. So he won't be able to get that this year, but he can plot ways to make sure he gets it next year if he ever runs downfield again.
The only way that's going to happen is if he does retire and invents a site that keeps that stat, because I don't know of any site that keeps that stat. And you'll have to do.
That's amazing. I can't believe that there's a single place that doesn't, because every stat is somewhere.
I've yet to find it.
Okay. Well, we need to. That's out to all of you. I mean, look, we had someone that made a Moe's tweets count wizard, right? So
yeah.
Why can't someone do a who downed the ball when it came to a standstill the most? That's what I want to know. T. Higgins in concussion protocol, no change there. We'll see whether he comes back this weekend or not. Zach Taylor had a press conference yesterday, talked a little bit about some play calling regrets and decisions. Jay, you kind of chronicled a lot of that stuff in your final thoughts today. What did you think about Zach kind of bemoaning a little bit more of the details of how the non-challenge of the chase touchdown on the goal line went down?
He was asked if there was the one thing that he wishes he would have done different, and that's what he pointed to. And it's not like the last year's opener where he's been very candid about going for it on fourth and one at his own 30, almost cost the team the game. I still think it's a hindsight regret, because in the moment, I don't know how much more he could have done there. It's that they were very, maybe this is Altafiber's fault that everything was slow. Everything was screwed up, but there were no replays, and you've got to get that in so fast. The only one they showed, you couldn't really see. You got everybody on the other side, Steelers obviously signaling incomplete. So his thought process wasn't more get down and attack. It was, why wait and let the Steelers challenge it? And maybe it's incomplete at that point. And when you don't have the replays to go on, he's right. That corner is the worst place for him to see what actually happened live, because not only is it the furthest point away, but you've also got everybody standing in front of you. He just didn't have a clear view of it with his own eyes, and the replays were no help. So, and I, not to defend him, but I hear a lot of people saying it cost him the game. I don't get where that comes from, because they score there, they tie the game. Presumably the extra point plays out the same way. What makes you think it wouldn't? So then you're tied, and then the Steelers have the ball with a chance to go down and win the game, as opposed to just trying to run out the clock. And if that doesn't happen, then who knows how much time the Bengals have, if they have time to get down and get that chase touchdown at the end. Or if it goes to overtime, then you have to assume that plays out the same way. So it could have cost him the game, but to say it definitively cost them the game is not right.
No, it was referenced. The first response to you tweeting something out about it was fireable offense. I just, come on, man. Come on. I mean, look, I'm with you. Like, in that, we were saying the same thing. Like, did he catch it? That we in the press box live, we're watching it. Our angle is barely better than what they, maybe better than what they had on the field. And the coaches up in the box are seeing the same thing. The coaches, they don't get replays that you don't get at home. We were in third down or second down of that series before we first saw the replay that showed that the Chase got the ball in. I mean, they didn't get that thing up in, you know, immediately at all. And the worry was maybe it was incomplete. You're trying to kind of decipher all of that. Yeah, I think you get up there and settle in once you have a better feel. But look, the concept of that being a come on. I mean, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Nathaniel Hackett was a fireable offense.
Which I have a run past. I have a question on that. In a minute. We'll get to that a little bit. Could you fire somebody for making that decision in this first game?
No,
I mean, but maybe if this was week 18 and they were 5-11 or something like that.
Put him on probation.
Yeah. This weekend, hello, friends. Nansen Romo and Tracy Wolfson on the call for you. Bengals will be in black, orange socks. Always exciting to know about what the uniform combination is going to be. That's how newsy it is right now. There's lots that, you know, without diving into just rehashing the game, which we've now done twice, we don't want to do that too much. We want to try to peel it forward now, which is why we're going to talk a little bit about the offensive line. There's kind of the instant reaction, I think, that we all had and a lot of people had was 7 sacks, a lot of pressure, new line, same as the old line. And I think that there's a core of that certainly is true. What's been interesting is listening to Zach Taylor. I talked with Brian Callahan yesterday, talk about they came away from this far more encouraged than discouraged with the direction of the offensive line. Now there's a certain element of you're going to say you that is the way that you want to feel. But you know, the point being that just talking about sacks or whatever, there's a lot more nuance to it when you look at who was at fault on the sacks, how they happened, and then the sheer volume and the competition of who they were going against changes some things and makes them a little more interesting. I'm going to first, before we get started here, bring in this clip from Zach Taylor at his press conference yesterday, talking a little bit about assessing the offensive line.
What were your impressions of the offensive line, particularly with the pass blocking?
You know what, I mean, people are going to write the stories about the sacks because we had a lot of them, and until we don't have them, that should be the story. You know, I get it, that's part of it. But I thought the offensive line did a nice job. You know, you look at 6 sacks, everybody's involved. You know, some of them are free rushers that aren't their responsibility. Sometimes it's the back, sometimes it's the quarterback, sometimes it's the line. So sometimes it's me putting us in a bad position. So again, we got to get it cleaned up to where we're not taking 6 sacks in a game. But I thought that they showed some really encouraging things, that we know it's a good defensive line. We know it's a good defense. They pressure a lot. They got good guys that can pressure. And I thought that they gave us a chance to win, and it's something to build off of and continue to improve there.
How much did you, along those lines, see them ascend even over the course of the game? Did you feel like once they kind of got a few drives under their belts, you saw the level go up even?
You know, not really. I thought from the jump, you know, the first one is a tough matchup on the first play of the game. The play got extended a little bit, and that's a tough go of it for Cordell there. And then from there, you know, I thought guys really settled in pretty quick. You know, there's about a one-off maybe at each spot over the course of the game, but I wouldn't say that it was a settling in. I thought those guys, a lot of them played pretty good from the get-go.
Down Joe Mixon's a big explosive run. What happened there to make that successful, and how did you guys get more of those?
Yep, really good scheme by Frank. You know, that was Frank's kind of short yardage concept that he liked against that look. really good. It was well executed by everybody up front. I think LC and Drew Sample primarily were at the point of attack there. Drew Sample had a heck of a block, you know, on the backer kind of plugging through the B gap. Drew did a great job. LC did a great job. They created a nice hole there for Joe, and then Joe did a good job finishing the run inside the 5 yard line. So really well designed play by Frank and really well executed by the guys up front.
Kind of piggyback on Kelsey's run question. I mean, that long run was nice, but the rest of them, you're under 2 yards per carry. I mean, is that a disappointing aspect of yesterday that you weren't able to get more in the rest of the run game?
Yeah, you know, they pressured a lot of our run looks. They do a good job up front too, and There were some 4 yard runs that we feel confident as we continue to go and clean some things up are going to be bigger. They're going to be 6 to 8 to 10. So there was just some details of the things to finish off some of those runs that we feel like we can continue to improve on. So not discouraged. They traditionally have been a difficult front to run against. Last year they were down some personnel quite a bit, and so that led to some of their issues they had in the run game. But what we always look at Pittsburgh as a really stout run defense that you're just going to have to commit to it and keep grinding it out and hoping that you hit those big runs like we did on the duo. And so again, just I got confidence in our guys that we'll continue to pound it and get it done.
I guess that's just a chemistry thing, right? Chemistry between Mixon and the line, kind of their first game really together, all the new pieces. Is that kind of
important? It's a little bit like the sacks. You can point to a different on each one. Man, if this one player had done this one thing for just a tick longer, we'd had a couple more yards, and then you move on to the next play. It's the same thing for the next guy. So that's just that's not unique to us. You know, I think you see a lot of teams, you take out their biggest run of the game and you're going to say that their run per attempt was low. That's always the argument that I love to make and everybody loves to make. You know, look how many yards we rushed for, and then you'll throw, well, we had an 8 yard run. So, you know, whatever game you want to play, I'm confident that the run game will be something that we can lean on as the season goes.
It's easy at first glance to look at Cordell Volson losing in matchups against Cam Hayward and trying to make a decision on what he is, but how much do you factor in that Cam Hayward is probably one of the best defensive linemen, and how, from your evaluation, minus the sacks that he let up against Cam, how did you think Cordell did?
I thought Cordell showed some real potential in that game. Again, his last two non-Bengals opponents have been two Hall of Famers, and Aaron Donald and Cam Hayward, and that's not the ideal way to start your career. I saw some really good things from him, really encouraging things. He hung with it over the course of the game. You know, so really, really, really encouraged by the job that Cordell did, and he's only going to continue to get better.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
So I think when that was said, you know, Zach Taylor answering questions about the offensive line there, and particularly even saying that they didn't even think that was a settling in thing, because they did clearly get better as the game went along and they made some adjustments. I took people aback. Oh, you're saying it went well, right? And I think here's Jay. Let me quiz you on this. Okay. Sunday, feels like yesterday, the Bengals ranked 27th in the league this weekend in sack percentage. So percentage of dropbacks in a sack, which is 11.7%. Important to note that when they're just in such a crazy volume, you can't just throw, you know, volume numbers out there. So 27th. So they weren't even the worst, which, you know, there's some squads out there. You might want to go check their tape. But 27th in sack percentage. What do you think they were in pressure percentage rank? How many of their dropbacks, where did they rank in the amount of their dropbacks were pressured?
Okay, so it would be 26 of 94. So that's what, about 29, 30%? I don't know. 18th, 19th?
10th.
Wow.
That's for the whole game. 29.2% is 10th in the league. Throw out the first quarter, 6th. best pressure percentage rate.
Yeah.
As a, the again, this is from last year, right? This is a part of last year. Such a high percentage of pressures are being converted into sacks. You know, you have Burrow who likes to try to extend plays. You have some, so when guys are getting back there, they are getting to him often. That was part of what happened with the sacks yesterday. But as a whole, of how many you know, clean pockets, lack of disruption in what they were actually doing. You're talking once they settled down sixth and general 10th. You know, if you would have just thrown those numbers out there, and I know everybody, people are going to say, oh, you can find a number anywhere. Okay, there's lots, I mean, whatever.
No.
It's true. But, I mean, give you a high percentage of Burrow clean pockets without a pressure, and I think you're happy. And that's not saying that the Bengals should be happy with this, and I think that's part of what Zach Taylor was saying there. Was like, you know, obviously you don't want to have the many sacks. You got to clean it up. But as a whole, you know, especially when you consider that maybe half, a little over half of the sacks were even on the offensive line in their view, you end up coming away saying, you know, that wasn't as bad as maybe it felt in the moment.
Well, it's a great point because they ran 94 plays. I mean, normally you're in the 60 range and you're running 50% more plays, so that number does look higher. And I was actually going to make a quip coming off of that, off of the Zach comp after the Zach clip, where you know you're giving up too many sacks when you lose track of how many you're giving up, because he said six twice, and they actually gave up.
Well, that he's because they don't count the
one on the O-line.
They don't count one where it was a zero gain where Burrow just slid down. That's just part of my, and that's part of the point. Seven sacks. When you really tick through them, I mean, you have that one, which is literally a check ball where they're just throwing. Jamar Chase is standing with no one within 10 yards of him as the hot in case the slot blitz comes down. Comes free. Burrow just bobbles the ball a little bit and does so he can't throw it to him wide open. By the time he avoids the blitzer, well, you know, they've already come up on Chase seeing where that thing was going, so he takes a step forward and just kind of slides down. I mean, that's not on the offensive line, right? That's not, and it's a sack, but they're not going to count it. It's a zero gain. It's one that wasn't really about the pass rush or anything like that. It's not really a sack. You know, you have the opening play of the game. It's a quick game. Let me just tell you this. You guys can think what you want to about the Bengals' offensive game plan. It was not to force Cordell Volson to go one-on-one against Cam Hayward for 3 seconds on the first play of the game. Okay? Like, that was not how they plotted it.
That was
a ball that got held longer than it should have. That was supposed to be a quick shot. That was not the plan for that to be what was supposed to happen. And the quick shot was wide open. T. Higgins coming over on the slant. So that's, you know, that's not that, like Zach Taylor said, that play got extended. That's not that they're not putting that on the O line. It got extended. It's that's not what it was supposed to be. You know, and there's plenty of times where they weren't great, right? But once they figured out, you know, the not just what the Steelers were doing, but just really recognizing what they need to be doing, take the check downs, throw the quick hits, throw underneath, like just stop looking downfield trying to make everything. Once they did that and started just throwing those, they moved the ball consistently. The pressures were far down. Everything was really in rhythm, and it really didn't take on. That's how you end up with, you know, they have the. Almost all the major damage happened in the first quarter. You know, I mean, that was it. After that, you know, everything really was like, okay, get settled back into see what they're trying to do to you. Stop trying to push it. Just take, they're going to give you the underneath stuff all day long. Go back and look at the interception, the pick six to make it Fitzpatrick on the second play. I mean, T. Higgins is just running underneath on a slant. Without anybody anywhere near him, right in front of Burrow's eyesight. That's his read. And the ball ends up going out trying to fit it in deep. And it's like, look, just when you start taking underneath stuff. And after that, he did over and over and over again. And that's how he ended up having such a big day once they finally got past the early stuff, was just, man, just killing him on all that underneath stuff. So, you know, I think they came away feeling like, look, once they started doing that, and late in the game when they had to protect, they did that. It's not as bad as when you're 7 sacks, the line sucks again, right? I mean, sorry to yell.
But I mean, yes, there is definitely some validity to that. But the other side of it is, anytime you take 7, even though the percentage is low, it's you're talking about mounting damage on your quarterback. And this is how they're going to be winning games this year, playing games this year, where if teams are going to take away the deep shot, they're going to need longer 8, 9, 10 play drives to score instead of hitting those big shots over the top. So there's going to be more opportunities for Burrow to get hit. And, you know, you talk about the pressure, that the maybe the more concerning thing here, and I don't think it's you need to put up the red flag. I don't know if you want to wave the red flag, but Joe Burrow lives in the intermediate range of the pass. That is where he is at his best. And on passes of 10 to 20 yards against the Steelers, he was 6 of 13 for 110 yards and 2 interceptions, a 36.2 passer rating. He was only pressured on 3 of those 13 throws. That's where that's almost more alarming than the sacks, even though you don't expect it to continue. You wonder, was it the rust from not playing the preseason? Is it a hangover from the appendectomy? That was a really concerning number, because that is where he thrives.
Yeah, you know, you have the deep middle shot. I guess they're counting was the Burrow to Boyd shot that Sutton picked off inside 20. They were counting that as in that intermediate range. Otherwise, I'm trying to pick the other, which one would have been the two picks in between 10 and 20 yards, because it wasn't the Watt, right?
No, the Watt one. There was a deep one. There was the Watt one at the line, and then there was the two intermediates, and I guess it would be the Minka, Sutton and the Witherspoon.
Minka is the middle. I mean, the fourth down one, I don't know. Fourth down is them trying to fit a ball. I mean, it's fourth down. You're just trying to shove something in there. They're with even whether there's nothing or not. I don't know that I'm even counting that against Burrow. I guess I've kind of left it out of my mind. I get it. Like I don't think that there's gonna be, this is not anybody declaring success, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that once everybody settled down and kind of got into the rhythm of the game against a really, really good defense with two Hall of Famers going against, you know, your weaker links on the day in Lael Collins and Cordell Volson, although Jonah Williams certainly had his rough moments with Alex Highsmith, they moved the ball. Goal line, red zone, we can talk all day about. But the PFF had 4 of the 5 guys with pass protection grades of 74 plus, which would be top 50 out of the 150 qualifying offensive linemen from this weekend. I mean, only Collins was under that, and they had Karras with a clean slate, perfect game as far as any pressures allowed, and an 84 grade. I mean, Karras was really good. Kappa was definitely solid. And Volson, you know, had his rough moments with Cam Hayward without question. But, you know, as Zach Taylor pointed out, he's had 2 real tests so far.
Yeah.
They've been against Aaron Donald and Cameron Hayward. Like, you know, and other than that, it was the insurance salesman he played in the preseason. There is a middle ground, right? Yes. Like, where we can get a better judgment on Cordell Volson, but they came away really encouraged with Volson there too. So a lot of things to get to. Let's Jay, you've got stats. And then we're gonna bring Mo into the room here in a second. Jay, what do you got offensive line stats?
Okay, I was curious to look how many consecutive games the Bengals have given up at least 1 sack, and this is counting playoffs. And it's 19. The last time they didn't was week three last year against the Steelers when they snapped the Steelers streak of consecutive games with the sack. So just total irony there in a season when they gave up 70 of them. So then I was curious, where does 19 games in a row giving up a sack rank? And it's not all that. It's the seventh longest in franchise history. The record is 42 from 97 to 99. So then I was curious where it ranks in terms of the longest active streak in the NFL. Again, seventh. The Jets are 53. It's the sixth longest in NFL history. And the Jets, oh, by the way, right around the corner after the Bengals play the Cowboys. So you're going to have conceivably a Jets team riding a 54-game streak and a Bengals team riding a 20-game streak. It's just amazing. The longest active by far is the Jets at 53. The next longest is the Bears at 29. So it's not unheard of, but it is still a pretty substantial streak of at least a 19 in a row with at least one sack allowed.
Love it. Let's do a quick sponsor break and we'll come back with ESPN 1530's Mo Egger.
I feel like I've done a shot of Liquid Death when I was at the University of Dayton taking a visit one time. And Mo, you probably did it with me while you were there.
There's a very strong likelihood.
They serve it. Yes. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's going on, guys?
Oh, hey, Mo. Not a whole lot. Good to have you here. Yeah. So we have we got the tweet counter, Jay. Yeah. Have you worked the tweet counter up?
I tweeted during the game more often than I usually do. I'm usually not a big in-game tweeter guy, but I was kind of feeling it. Oh, look at this.
Somebody made this. We would never have gone so far as to make this. Someone that listens to the show made this. They took the time to put your face on it and everything. So the tweet counter has its own graphic now here. So shout out to everyone watching on YouTube. You get this of Mo next to Mo. What do we got, Jay? I can't even read this.
It's Jay Goney, the one that originally made the counter. It had the graphic on it. It's 128, so he's down 10 from last week's 138.
Oh, okay, yeah. Down 10, surprising. Yeah. But that's okay. Still a big number and plenty to tweet about. And mostly, I always look forward to your summation tweet that comes at the end of games. Sometimes it's very therapeutic. Sometimes it's strictly angry. Sometimes it's angry. Sometimes it's based in comedy. And this one, I think, I was looking for what my question has been over the last couple of days is everybody can have individual concerns about ways certain aspects of Sunday were handled, unfolded in a game that you felt like you certainly should have won. And we, Lord knows, can beat the preseason snaps thing into the ground. What was your biggest long range, big picture concern for you coming out of what we saw in the season opener?
They've got to pass block better. I mean, you could do the whole preseason thing. Well, they should. Okay, fine. Worry about that next August. Let's revisit that next summer. Should they change the preseason approach? I'm not really sure they should based on one bad preseason or one bad regular season opener, but that's a question for next summer. I want to know, how are they going to block Micah Parsons on Sunday? So I want to know how they're going to protect Joe Burrow over the course of the season, because I think we all agree the offensive line is going to coalesce. Cordell Volson's going to grow into the role. The guys are going to block better. But like when are we going to get to a point where we're like, you know what, this group is okay? And because if the answer isn't for a few weeks, I wonder how much is that going to compromise their chances of being as good as we think they could be. So that from a 30,000 foot view, it's the same question we had last week. And it's not about preseason prep. It's just about, okay, now moving forward, when is this offensive line going to consistently perform at a level that makes you feel pretty good about what they could accomplish offensively? Aside from that, my tweet after the game was, I still think this team has a really high ceiling. I don't think there's any reason to not feel that way. I'm going to guess Joe Burrow doesn't have any more 4-interception games. Offensively, they were as janky as you could expect. And if they had their normal long snapper, they would have won the game. And today we'd be talking about how they gutted one out and the heart and resiliency of those Bengals. Instead, things went the other way. I will say this, that it is a little bit sobering that, we sort of put the Bengals in this tier with Kansas City and Buffalo and Baltimore and as like legitimate, you know, bona fide title contenders, and maybe the Chargers too. Three of those teams looked the part. The Chargers, for chunks of that game, looked the part. The Bengals never did. And so if you want to fend off the naysayers who are like, you know what, I think last year was a fluke, it was a byproduct of luck and all that stuff, I need to see it. I'm not quite yet ready to put them with the Chiefs and the Bills and the Ravens and the Chargers, even though they went to the Super Bowl last year. Well, what you saw from those teams and what you saw from the Bengals was drastically different. But again, I just want to know, when's the offensive line going to get to a point where we're pretty comfortable with the guys blocking for Joe Burrow?
I'm curious if when the Steelers, when Chris Boswell kicked a 48-yard field goal with 11 minutes left in the game to take a 20-14 lead, obviously a lot of time left for the Bengals win, but did you throw anything knowing you lost your bet of Steelers under 17.5?
It's the very first thing that came out of my mouth. No, it's not. It's the second thing that came out of my mouth. Yep. Lost my imaginary. What was it? $15. Lost my imaginary $15. Yeah. It's interesting of all the different things that unfolded on Sunday for me, that was like item number 13 that I was thinking about after the game. But yes, in real time, it was not lost on me that I lost my fake wager.
All right, let's just take a quick break. Mo, we will reconvene at between 3 and 4 o'clock at the Moreline Lager House today, and I think there's a good chance to have a longer discussion about offensive line. We just spent a lot of time talking about it here, so I don't want to go back in on it anymore. But the middle ground of what the coaches and those internally are feeling about the way the offensive line played is interesting, up against the perception of, I think, how people feel like the offensive line played, because optimism, encouraged, played good, all phrases used from internally. So I think, you know, where the nuances of why that exists for them and what does playing good need to look like for this offensive line? All good discussions to have, but first we got to get to our bets. We got to make sure our imaginary, totally fictional, not real money involved at all bets that we're doing every week with 20 units that we can break up into two, one Bengals, one NFL. Mo, do you want to start it off? Have you got it?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to take 15 units. Joe Burrow will never have a four-pick game again, not just in 2022, again. If we're still together, like in 2038, when we're talking about,
you're going, you know, real long haul on this.
Yeah. Thing. Right. When we're talking about like, all right, well, when's he going to get his gold jacket? We're going to look back on that one time that we remember him throwing four picks in a game. I'm like, you know, sometimes you get like a cheap Hail Mary or something like that that counts against. He's never going to have a four pick game again. I mean, look, yes, the pass blocking issues were what they were, or maybe they weren't. I don't know. Joe wasn't good. That was as bad as I think Joe's ever going to play. And he still was a PAT away from having delivered in the clutch and put his team down the field 60 yards and a buck 27 and engineered a game winning drive. But I'm going to guess he never has a four pick game again. That's 15.
Wonder what the line would be. What would the Vegas line be on that ever for the rest of his career? Would that be even money? Or would that be you'd probably get odds on that?
I'm gonna get plus odds on that. Yeah,
you get three to one. I mean, four is a lot of picks. His career will be long. So, what would you put that at? Where would you handicap that, Jay?
I would put it about even money, but it's almost a lose-lose proposition, because we're going to award a winner at the end of this year. You can't win money on that bet by the end of this year. So all you can do is lose money if he does have a four-pick game. So
what would it be then? And then let's set the line for the rest of this year then.
For the rest of this year?
I mean, I'm not going to give you odds. I think you're a negative, but I'll give you, you know, what, maybe negative –
I'm going to go minus 225. Joe Burrow doesn't have a four-pick game this season. How about that?
Another one? I would have gone even higher, closer to minus 300.
Okay. I'll still buy it.
All right. He's buying it at minus 300, taking Jay's money. And then you've got another fiver left?
Yeah, I'm trying to make this Mitchell Wilcox related.
It has to be non-Bengal related.
Well, I mean, NFL. So I felt, I mean, I feel bad because Mitchell Wilcox could like end up being the greatest tight end in the history of the Cincinnati Bengals. And he's always going to be remembered for being the backup long snapper in the season opener. And it just not going so well. So here's my thing. Bengals are playing the Cowboys this week. Mike McCarthy to be the first coach fired. That's my $5 bet.
In lieu of anything
Mitchell Wilcox related. I mean, he just watching that game on Sunday night, it felt like dead coach walking. Now it's Cooper Rush. You got Jerry Jones calling his press conference. The coach is up there. Don't even know his quarterback's got a bum thumb. Jerry's already telling people. Sean Payton's lurking. I think it was in the Dallas Morning News. They had a really cool illustration on the front of the sports page, and it was Cowboys going up, Cowboys going down, the Lombardi trophies gathering cobwebs, and like Sean Payton just sort of lingering in the background. I just watched that on Sunday, and I'm like, you know what? They may can him before game one. Maybe they can him after game one. Maybe they can him after game two. But since they're playing the Cowboys this week, my $5 is because you could take odds on this, man. First coach to be fired this year, I'm going to go Mike McCarthy.
What do you guys think? They're bad, man.
They're awful.
I'm with you. He was definitely high up on the list. I mean,
yeah, he's second. He was a plus 600 at first. Second. We can keep it at plus 600.
Yeah, we'll give you that. Although at this point, we probably should be chopped in half. But we'll get since we kind of hosed you on the last one. We'll give you this.
Well, that's the thing. So I think the Bengals are going to win on Sunday, and then those odds. If he doesn't get fired, those odds are going to come down. I should have bought it before week one, but. Again, watching that on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, he just had this look on his face. They do in-game interviews now, like the NBA does. And Melissa Stark, Mike McCarthy was looking at her like, you have a car running? Like, I could be at like Dallas's best barbecue shack by the fourth quarter. I mean, he just looked like, what am I doing here? I'm going to get whacked. Peyton's going to be the coach. Now my quarterback's got a busted thumb. So plus 600. Yeah, I'll gladly take that.
Jay, what do you got?
All right, I'm in that vein for my Bengals related bet. I'm only going to put $5 on this. I'm going for some value here, and really, I thought it would be higher, but I'll still take. It's plus 1100 for the Bengals to win by shutout this week.
Wow!
The Cowboys only scored 3 last week with Dak for most of the game. The Bengals defense looked really good. It's been a while since they've had a shutout. But that's why I'm only going to put $5 on it with a chance to win 55. That'll be my Bengals related bet. I'm in the lead, by the way. I'm the only one that won a bet last week, although both of Paul's were futures. But I did win on the Baker Mayfield over 219.5 passing yards. So I'm going to go maybe the polar opposite of Baker Mayfield and go with a Patrick Mahomes bet this week. He is plus 105 to go over half an interception. Chargers had 3 interceptions last week. They intercepted Mahomes 3 times last year. I think he throws at least one Thursday night. So I'm gonna put $15 on Mahomes throwing at least one interception.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I see if I can get this right? Last shutout was the Manziel game.
Yeah,
14-30-0.
Yeah.
Okay.
There it is. Wallace Gilberry. I'm going to first of all, tough Sunday for Doug Peterson, winning coach of the year. Rough start on that one, but you know what? Jags were feisty; they were in it with the Commanders, so maybe there's still hope. I'm just gonna do a simple under on Bengals Cowboys. Cowboys defense very good. Bengals defense very good. The under is 43.5. So I'm gonna go with a 15 unit on the 43.5 under, and I'm gonna say for the other 5, Seahawks are getting 9.5 at the Niners. I'm not saying it. Geno Smith looked certainly serviceable last night against a really good Denver defense. The 49ers looked poor, and now in Chicago, and now all of a sudden a 9.5 spot. Between those two teams, I don't know that I view that way. So I'll go ahead and take Seahawks to cover the 9.5 straight up.
I like that one.
Yep. So that's what we've got for our fictional, totally for entertainment only segment. Mo, I look forward to seeing you this afternoon between 3 and 4 at Moorline Lager House. Maybe I'm going to have that the bread pudding today. I think I might.
Here's what I want to know. Will I get any credit for gamely battling through this, holding this 1972 handheld microphone? Because no. I left my professional one at 50 West last week that you're going to deliver to me today.
You did. Yeah. You, as we were getting ready to leave, it was just sitting there by its lonesome on the table. But don't worry, I have it and we'll return it to you this afternoon so you can be back in the, you know, the
comfort. Look at this thing, you know.
Yeah, I don't. I actually don't even think it's on.
I mean, it feels like Monty Hall used this on Let's Make a Deal in 1974.
I think it's actually probably from like your daughter's play stuff, and it's totally not real, but you just need to hold it just for the comfort of making it feel like you have a microphone.
It doesn't play Frozen songs, so it's not hers. We do have that device around here somewhere.
Oh, I have the full karaoke machine at my house, okay, plays. They make you Bluetooth it in, but it's like it plays the Frozen sounds as it starts it up and everything else. It's a whole thing. I can drop it off at your house. I'd love for you to have it.
Hard pass. We're good.
All right. Talk to you later. See you this afternoon.
Hey guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Mo.
All right. Great to have Mo Egger with us, joining us. And, you know, there's a, I think there is a really good conversation about what's happening with this offensive line that they're having internally right now. I think that there are probably very heated debates about whether that offensive line is as bad off as they think it is, or maybe not so bad, or where it actually lands. And I think that's for a lot of people to judge, but I think you're more going to continue to judge it over what we see the next couple of days. Dallas is not going to be any let up. You're not all of a sudden going to go to Dallas and be like, oh, what a reprieve. And the same thing for the Jets. Carl Lawson waits in the wings, right? That's what this league is. So we're going to find out. We're going to find out if it's BS and false hope off some of the deeper look of the way things transpired, or if it really was, hey, maybe it really wasn't that bad. When you look closer, that's the beauty of the NFL. We all get to learn together as it plays out.
One thing I think was underrated that stood out was how good Joe looked running the ball. And yeah. Getting out of pressure. And that's another thing that can, as long as that threat's there, it can slow down the defensive pass rush just a little. If they're worried about him doing that, would he have 47 yards? So that I thought, you know, he may not have thrown the ball as well as what we're used to seeing. But I thought that was a really good sign, because it did look like that was kind of taken back last year. He did have that the memorable run where he jumped up and pointed to the first down in the game against the Titans. But as far as volume, that may have been the most rushing yards he's had in a game. I think he took off six times, and one was the 0 yard gain that you were referencing that got credited as a sack.
Yeah, I mean, the long run that he has is a critical play in the game late in the fourth quarter, and so I mean you know that set them up. Yeah, I thought his ability to run and make big plays, had a big third down that he made by about an inch. I'm with you. I think that part of it was certainly encouraging stuff to see from Joe Burrow. Let's talk a little bit about special teams real quick, since it's such a big deal as that they try to figure out how this thing goes forward. Although, you know, so Jay, you know, everybody said Darren Simmons sat down with everybody yesterday and kind of talked through what happened, what went wrong, and what's going on next. Let's bring you a quick little snippet of Darren Simmons before we go forward into this topic.
So on the extra point block, I know Drew's using the right wing, but he was on the left wing at the time, and he said it was on him that he took a wrong step. Is he right?
I think that'd be probably pretty true. You know, he's somebody that's, you know, blocked in a lot of critical field goals for us over time. I felt probably more comfortable having him over there versus somebody who hadn't done it for us before in Hayden. And so I moved Drew over, thinking that, you know, that he would hold in there and knew exactly what we'd done. He didn't block it exactly the way we wanted to have it blocked. There's two guys over there. He was not the only one at fault on that play for sure.
What, was it anything to do with the velocity of the snap?
No.
Okay, yeah.
Zero.
Okay.
Yeah, but the execution, the snap, the hold, you watch the kick's perfect. Evan's timing is perfect. that play had nothing to do with the snap. I mean, it was that was all about the protection. It wouldn't matter if Clark Harris would have been on that one. That ball would have been blocked.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter if Clark Harris had snapped that one back there. And I thought that was interesting. It's Drew Samples over there and ends up not getting enough of a piece, you know, but also it's, you know, they're both supposed to be leaning in on Minka Fitzpatrick over there on the left side. And instead he comes through untouched and gets it. And, you know, everyone wants to scream and yell about Mitchell Wilcox, but nobody ever should have even talked about Mitchell Wilcox, to be honest. Mm-hmm. If they just block that up correctly, you never see any of the Mitchell Wilcox debacle. It's a total non-story other than saying, oh, who's going to be the long snapper next? And so it's kind of was lost a bit in the shuffle of all of it,
yeah.
of Drew Sample ending up kind of being in that spot. But, that's just it. One step, right? One step can be the difference between a win and a loss.
Yeah, I've talked. I know they put it on the scoreboard because that's how the Bengals didn't announce it. That's how we became aware that yeah. Clark Harris was out. And I've talked to a number of people that were at the game that had no idea. They didn't see that go up on the scoreboard. A lot of people didn't even realize that there was a new long snapper in there until after the game. So the second one, the one in overtime, yes, that was the high snap. That one was problematic. And even Darren said on that one that it was still – Kevin Huber should have handled the snap, should have spun the ball around, and Evan should have made the field goal. He was firmly in Mitch Wilcox's corner and saying that he did everything he was supposed to do. It wasn't an ideal second snap, obviously, but it's interesting because I see Evan do this in pregame warmups where he's got that little automatic holder and he kicks, and he kicks field goals without a run-up. He just stands there and swings his leg. And that's almost what he had to do on that game winner because the high snap threw off the timing and he came to a stop and almost came to a stop and then kicked it. And I want to ask him why he does that, if it's for that reason or if it's just kind of a get the leg loosened up and the muscle memory type of thing. But it is interesting that I something I've noticed where he'll do that and kick a field goal without any kind of run up just from a standing position. And certainly could have come in handy if he'd have punched that. Very short, 29 yards. I mean, like Evan said, he should be able to make that with his left foot.
There, yeah, there's no doubt. So Cal Adamidas will come in now as the long snapper, and theoretically this should not be an issue anymore. But you wonder, like so much of that stuff is, gosh, timing and the mental confidence that everything's going to be perfect in the right place every single time, and you wonder what this does to Evan McPherson going forward, although it should be noted, like there was zero issues with any operation in all of camp or preseason. And that was with Clark and Cal both taking their turns, Drew Chrisman taking his turn, holding with Kevin Huber, and Evan was incredible. I mean, he didn't miss anything, it seemed like. And so I think the thought is that this should just be a blip and be what it is. But you never know. I mean, someone who's been so good in one little thing can maybe change the dynamic of how it's viewed. But that's something that, again, that we'll monitor going forward. But I don't. There's no reason to believe that Cal shouldn't be just fine. Again, 5-year starter, All American long snapper at Pitt. No slouch. Did it really well in the preseason in camp without much issue. So I think there's thought that this should be fine. But again, never done it in a game. So who knows?
Yeah, I asked Clark Harris about that. Someone asked him what his message to Cal would be, and he said, just go out there and be confident. And I asked Clark, can you remember back 14 years? Can you remember your first game as a long snapper? Were you confident? And he said that he wasn't, and that the key there, he didn't say he wasn't confident, but he said he did have nerves, and he said the key is don't be overconfident. Don't act overconfident. He said the other team's going to sniff that out. They are going to be in your ear. And we saw the Steelers doing that to Mitch Wilcox, talking in his ear, trying to rattle him. He's like, Cal's done this for 5 years. He did it in high school too. He's done it longer than that. He just needs to go out there and be confident in his abilities and do what he's been doing all through camp and just put the mental part of it aside.
Yeah. I mean, what I enjoyed was, the swarm of media surrounding Cal Adomaitis in the back room, back portion of the locker room yesterday. I'm trying to imagine what is the highest number of media members that have ever spoken to Cal at the same time in an interview setting, not in just a, hey, we're just talking as you're hanging out type deal like that. I mean, that had to have been maybe 10 times the most that's ever happened. I mean, it was everyone that was there because the locker room cleared out. This is a good transition into Arby's, our any related Bengals inside extras and stories, because hanging out in the locker room yesterday, you're sitting there, everyone comes out. So everybody comes in, flocking in, all the players come out of the team meeting. And when at the same time the locker room opens, so they're all leaving because it's Monday, everyone's out of here at right around 2-ish, and so they all flock, move out. So the locker room is basically empty outside of a very intense ping pong game involving Jermaine Pratt and a few others. Jermaine Pratt in like sweatpants and nothing else, no shoes, no shirt. He looked like he was in like a kung fu movie. It was great, and he's just killing the ball. I'm like, this is great. And so, but while that's happening, Cal is still there, and he's really the only storyline of anybody that's in there. And so, all the TV media that are there waiting for Zach Taylor to speak, go in, and plus everybody else just surrounding Cal Adomaitis. No, has any long snapper ever seen that kind of a gaggle, I wonder?
Yeah, well, I actually started to ask him that because at first there was a couple of us there and then the swarm came and I started to say, is this the big, and someone else jumped in with the question and it went in a different direction and I never went back and asked, but it had to have been. And it actually was weird because when we first walked in, Clark was there in his sling and we were talking to him and I saw Cal go in the lunchroom and I was thinking, oh, maybe he's going to grab some lunch and he's going to get out of here and we're not going to get a chance to talk to him. And I went and I looked and he was not in the lunchroom and someone said, hey, he's back at his locker. And then that's when the scrum hit him. I mean, it had to have been 15, 16. I mean, there were TV cameras, reporters, and it was, and nobody else to talk to. And he stood there and answered all the questions. I kept waiting for him to crack a joke or say something Clark-like. And he never did. He played it straight down the middle.
Yeah. Do you have any Arby's for me, Jay?
Ironically, it involves Cal Adomaitis from back in training camp. Okay. So I was in the media room still writing. Everybody was gone. That'll surprise you not at all. I was the last one out of there. And when the PR staff leaves, the door locks. And so I hear this tug on the door and it's locked. And I'm like, who's trying to get in? And I go and I open it and it's Cal Adomaitis. And he says, is this where I come to get verified? And I was like, actually it is. Emily Parker will take care of that for you, but she's gone for the day. And he said, okay. So then we just had, you know, a little chit chat and super nice guy. And so after I forgot about it until yesterday, and I went and I looked and still not verified.
Oh, maybe now
that he's the starting long snapper, that'll happen for him.
LS1, as Joe Daneman put it, so mine is, so we're the last couple of days, have randomly seen either texts or Twitter blow up as people are like, hey, your face is on my TV. And I'm like, what is going on? Well, that's because our commercial, Jay, is airing across games this whole weekend. It has been rather jarring to see people continually send me screenshots of our face up. And the idea that there's a commercial about us on Monday Night Football is it's a little nerve-wracking, to be honest. It's a little off-putting. I don't want to like that many people seeing it, but I guess, hey, that's good news. Good news for us, right? That to hear that podcast growl and run that we had last year, they kind of followed. It was sort of the commercial is based around Joe Burrow's recovery and run of the Super Bowl. And they go through all our content between stories and live rooms and podcasts that you all listen to, whatever, kind of on this commercial. But it's very weird to have people sending me like, what the hell is this on my screen?
I actually, my wife texted me last night, said she was going to bed early. So I'm driving home from the stadium, It's still the first half of the game. So I was like, well, I'm going to go to my local bar and grab a couple beers and some pizza and watch the game and see if the commercial comes on and see if anybody at the bar notices and says, hey, wait, that's you.
Jay, you will do anything to try to score a free drink.
Yeah. Well,
such an angle you're taking there.
No one would have noticed, because this is the type of people that were at the bar. They were arguing about the Jamar Chase touchdown that wasn't, and saying his foot was on the line. It doesn't matter where the ball is. And I was like, oh my God, I just had to hold my tongue and not get into a discussion and say, that is the dumbest thing I ever heard. That's the only thing that matters is where the ball is. So I doubt someone with that lack of awareness of football would have had the wherewithal to look at the screen and see my face there and then realize, hey, that's the guy on the other side of the bar.
No. The highbrow level that we have here on our podcast and here on the internet, on YouTube, they know that there's a certain, you know, we don't have that kind of unknowledgeable fans here listening to us. We love all of our listeners. That's a little bit of Arby's there for you. I got a question for you before we get into some run, pass, or boot and listener Q&A. And of course you have, I need this Bengals Steelers, I have no shame story. Here's a question for you posed off of last night. What would you do if the Bengals were playing in Seattle? Evan McPherson from 64 or Burrow on 4th and 5 with the game on the line? As Denver had last night, Nathaniel Hackett opted to try to shove Brandon McManus out there from 64 rather than let his $250 million quarterback try to gain 5 yards with the game on the line at the end. What would you do? What would the Bengals do in Seattle?
It's a great question. I would like to know how many field goals of 64 yards have been attempted and how many have been made. So what's that percentage and what's the NFL average on 4th and 5? And just go straight with the number there and see what – I think you go for it. I think you trust Joe Burrow. If you're down and you only got one shot left, if you don't have any time, then yeah, kick the field goal. But what they have, 36, 37 seconds? You've got time to get a first down and get closer to a much more manageable field goal.
They had time, they had timeouts and a lot of time if they would have used
all
it
three.
Correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep the ball in Burrow's hand. I think that's a general rule anywhere. Don't take the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands. But yeah,
even for Evan McPherson's foot.
For 64, I mean,
yeah, it's a long one.
He's got the length, but it's just a matter. It's, you never know the way the wind whips around. Who knows? It's Seattle. Is it misty?
In a road stadium, it's one thing to do it. You know the conditions are perfect in your home stadium that you know like the back of your hand. But in a road stadium like Seattle,
you only play once every 8 years,
right? Yeah, to me, that's kind of the variable that would definitely push me over the edge. But it's different because there's so much confidence in Evan, right? Bengals fans, man, they would be in – their stomachs would be in tatters with that decision. I love this guy and I love this guy. I'm supposed to hate one of the decisions that's made. How can I do this?
You know what I would do? And I asked Darren about this because, it was 4th down. You couldn't do it. But if it was 3rd and 5, I would run a fake. And then if it doesn't work, then you kick the field goal because they're never going to be expecting the fake. And as long as you've got time left, run the fake. You figure you're at least going to get back to the line of scrimmage and have just as long of a field goal. Maybe even let Joe Burrow be the holder and then run the fake.
Listen, you talk about fireable offenses. Jay's out here trying to run questionable fake field goals that have never been run before in the most high leverage spots when he doesn't even care about it's
third down is house money.
It's not house money. That play can go so wrong. You're just having some rando dude run a fake. Anything can happen on that play. That is a fireable offense and a bad decision. We talk about bad coaching decisions. Thank God that you are in the booth sitting next to me and not down on the field having to make calls on that one. Jay, we had a run pass or boot. What was your run pass? You have a run pass or boot here on with things that are least likely to happen again.
Yeah, it's a lot of bad things happened Sunday. Bengals fans hope they all get fixed and we don't see that again. But of these three things, which is least likely to repeat itself in 2022? Evan McPherson misses two kicks, Joe Burrow throws at least three interceptions, or the O-line gives up at least seven sacks.
Okay, so least likely to happen, you know, it's hard to say least likely to happen is seven sacks because we saw sack games, and this was not a career high sacks against Joe Burrow. It has happened before.
Super Bowl seven.
Yeah, and then two games
Tennessee.
Prior to that in Tennessee. That was with a healthy offensive line. We haven't even gotten into the idea of injuries out, sending guys like Jackson Carmen et al. Out there. So I think seven sacks is probably the most likely to happen. So I guess I'm booting seven sacks. I think you could see McPherson missing two field goals. I mean, if you had a couple, I think they're going to trot him out for long ones again. He's money, but I mean, you know, you're going to miss from 50 plus occasionally. And so I just don't think I thought before the year started that Burrow was going to be great at taking care of the ball, despite him almost throwing as many interceptions as I had predicted for the entire season on opening day. I still don't think we're going to see anything remotely close to that. So I would say least likely that I'm going to run with would be Burrow throwing three or more picks again.
Some people think he did throw five.
Depending on how you view that fumble, yeah.
The officials never threw the beanbag to indicate a fumble. So they never reviewed it. It was moot because they picked it out of the air. But that easily could have been ruled an interception instead of a fumble. I'm with you. Same order. Although if I said it was Burrow throws two or more interceptions in a game as opposed to three, do you lean that way?
I think we'll see
as two. Opposed
yeah,
to McPherson.
I think we'll see two again. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, because that makes it hard. Is it Burrow throwing two picks or is it McPherson missing two kicks? You could see either of those being the least likely.
Yeah, no, I would say Burrow's more likely to throw two picks than McPherson missed two field goals. All right, so Jay, we got one more run past your boot. To get to.
What's going to happen first in 2022? That the Bengals rebound from their -5 turnover differential to get back to even or better. Joe Burrow climbs back to reach a 2-1 touchdown to interception ratio. He could throw three touchdowns next week, three against the Jets without a pick, and there he is. He's at 8-4, and he's back at 2-1. Or the third one, the Bengals own sole possession of first place in the AFC North.
Well, I mean, the turnover differential thing's going to take some time. You know, will it?
Could they pick off Cooper Rush four times?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. You're already down five. I'm gonna run with the Burrow 2-1 touchdown to interception. I mean, when he gets hot, like I just feel like he's gonna turn the switches on that pretty quickly. We don't know how long it's gonna take for sole possession of first place to happen. I mean, Baltimore looks good to get past everybody. I mean, granted, it's 0-1. I'm not saying that won't happen, but I don't know. I think I'm gonna go with the Burrow 2-1 touchdown interception ratio. And I'm going to pass on sole possession of first place and boot positive turnover differential. It just takes a lot of time to make that up.
Yeah, I'll go the opposite way. I do think Burrow is my run. I'll go the turnover differential. I mean, you're talking about Cooper Rush and Joe Flacco the next 2 weeks. And then who knows, Tua in week four. The way this defense was so much of a ball hawking defense in the playoffs. I could see that being more likely. I'm not saying they won't get back into first place or sole possession of it at any point, but for that to be the first thing to happen, I'm going to boot that one because that is, even being one game behind, you're technically two behind everybody because being tied for first doesn't count. You have to be up there by yourself. So the earliest it could feasibly happen is week three. So I'll boot that one.
All right, let's move on quickly and go into some questions here from the YouTube folks. So thanks to everybody that has been watching on YouTube. Appreciate you as always. Like, subscribe, rate, all those things. We appreciate you hopping on. We've just kind of started this channel at the beginning of this year, and it's been nice to see so many people enjoying it and hopping in. Let's go to this first question here from Bobby Moore. Bobby Moore, a question. Run defense was stout. Any numbers on which guys had the biggest impact? Curious how Carter and Asai played and others in the box. Who separated? Well, the top of the list, DJ Reader played great. And if you're, yeah, and if you're talking about, you know, a defense playing well against the Bengals, defense playing well against the run, you're probably talking about DJ Reader having a great game, because that's usually where it always starts. He's just so good there. He was great on every level. He had a couple of stops, couple of tackles. He was plugging the hole every time. I mean, there was only really about 20 runs thrown at them at most. And so much of what the Steelers were doing was side to side with all the jets and everything, motion and stuff like that. They were deathly afraid of just handing the ball to Najee Harris up the middle. It was just, they just didn't want to do it. And probably because it was never successful when they did try to do it. But I would start with Reader, and I'd also give a tip of the cap to Logan Wilson, just because he did a really good job of chasing down all that side to side stuff, and that helped him have a really nice day.
Yeah, as far as the Zach Carter and Osai part of the question, I would say incomplete. I mean, they both only played 11 sacks. That neither of them made a big splash play or made any huge error that I remember. So we're just going to need to see those guys play a little more, but definitely a great sign with the way that they're continuing to defend the run, because that had to have been Pittsburgh's mindset coming in with Mitch Trubisky at quarterback. And it's just been a continuation. You saw it in the Super Bowl, the way they completely shut down the Rams run, shut down an injured or a hobbled Derrick Henry in the playoffs. It is a passing league now, but if you can still take the other team's run game away, you do yourself a great service.
No doubt. Also, honorable mention for sure, Sam Hubbard, who had a couple of really nice plays, in particular setting the edge as they were trying to run stuff around where he might not got a tackle or any credit for it, but they were trying to run something around those outside edges, and Hubbard was just having none of it all day, which is, you know, kind of his calling card.
PFF was really down on Hubbard too. His grade was really low. I was really surprised to see that he was at the bottom of the Bengals defensive players.
Well, I mean, the offsides play that ends up giving him the free play.
Missed a tackle or two.
And a couple missed. You end up, you know, those are big negatives as well. Let's go next question with gaming dad of two. Any surprise that the Bengals didn't extend Von Bell right before the season? Do you think this may get done during the offseason? I feel like we need to have him back there with Zach Hill next year. I'm not going to say surprised, but I thought I would have been not stunned at all. No. If they would have announced that last week. Like, I was kind of almost, I wouldn't say waiting for it, but I was keeping an eye out for that potentially being something that would come down to the pike. So, but I also understand, let Von Bell go have another good season. He's probably a guy you feel like you can get in March. Mm-hmm. You know, if he likes it here, wants to stay here, you can, you know, pay him with more information in front of you. And maybe they're still waiting. You know, they just want to get the Burrow thing away before they go allocating any more future money at this point. I'm not exactly sure, you know, their view on that, other than I know they value him and certainly did view him at the top of the list of people they consider extending.
Yeah, and I think that is the big part of it is they're counting every dollar right now, and they're just going to wait and see what Joe commands and then let the dominoes fall after that. And I think they know that there's not going to be some crazy bidding war for Von Bell. He turns 28 in December, and he is such a key piece of this defense, and he's a captain 3 years in a row. I think they're kind of banking on the fact that those that they can match whatever the going rate will be and just re-sign him in March.
Let's go with one more here, and let's go with Carson Boyle's thoughts of the lack of under center play action. I figured last year Joe didn't trust the line, but this year he seemed to have a lot more faith holding the ball, not checking his shoulder. I think it flips. A lot of discussion about them, you know, under center, handing it off and, you know, not really play action, trying to throw off that. I think that's something that they're certainly going to have to try to do more of, but I just don't think Burrow loves throwing out of that. He doesn't love turning his back to the defense. You know, I mean, he's so good at processing out of the shotgun and everything like that. I mean, they can't become predictable there, and that's certainly going to be something to watch. Was that circumstantial to this week? There should have been more play action coming off of those plays without question. But I think as a whole, they're going to want that to shade to a heavier percentage of those plays end up being runs. But they need to be less predictable for sure. And when it comes to play action versus handing the ball off from under center.
Yeah. I mean, you're right that it's not something that Joe likes to do. And then you remember back last year, he's coming off the knee injury. I remember early when he came back in OTAs, they didn't even have him practice in any handoffs because you just any kind of miscommunication and the back and the quarterback running each other and anything can happen there with the knee, a slip and the knee kind of goes the wrong way. I'm curious, when they run motion, if they're in the pistol, the shotgun, and they run motion and he fakes a jet sweep, does that count as play action? You fake a handoff to a receiver coming across, or does it have to be the standard under center? Or even if you're in shotgun and you fake the handoff, I mean, that those are other ways to get play action to at least keep the defense. Oh, I'm just saying
throwing from under center. I mean, right. Whether when they're under center, are they throwing it? You know,
yeah.
And it's like, no. You know, not often. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's necessarily about play action specifically, because they do a lot of, they do play action at a shotgun and stuff like that all the time. I think it's just a matter of when they're under center being less predictable, where everyone sees, okay, they're under center, everybody up to the line. And maybe that's what they're waiting for. Maybe they're waiting to see more people come up and crowd the line so that they can call on the play action or whatever as an audible, or just or maybe he's just looking at numbers running it. I mean, it's something worth, I think it's a topic that we'll be discussing probably in the this week or soon with Burrow and more with Brian Callahan, things like that, Zach Taylor, along those lines, because I'm sure there's a lot of nuance there, and Burrow's always just trying to, I mean, he's always free to check to whatever he wants to, and absolutely, of course, they have a play action check off every run play that they have at the line under center. So either they liked the numbers they were seeing, even though it wasn't successful, or Burrow just didn't want to be checking to his own number, throwing out of that. It's hard to know, but those are numbers that they look very closely at and try to stay away from being too predictable with. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that change in Dallas or New York in the near future. All right, Jay. Thanks everybody for dropping questions into the comments and just commenting down there. Always good to see come through, especially when you guys say nice things. Oh, and Coach Shed talking about buying us a beer, which I'm always into. If anybody wants to buy me a beer, I'll pretty much go just about anywhere. All right. Speaking of Jay, we said this segment should be called, quote, "I have no shame," because that's actual words you said yesterday when discussing some of these stories. So you have no shame. Tell me your Bengals Steelers story.
Okay, so it was 2006. It was New Year's Eve. It was the week after the botched snap in Denver, where they could have clinched the playoffs. So they had a chance to clinch the playoffs against the Steelers in the season finale. And my friend Hal and I went to the game. It was supposed to rain all day, and it did. And so, rainy in December, it's always chilly. So we went pretty hard at the tailgate. And I purposely brought plastic Bud Light 16-ounce bottles to the tailgate with the plan to sneak a couple in, because that's what they sell in the stadium. So I walk into the stadium feeling no pain. And what I had done, I had a coat on and I stuck a beer in the sleeve of each of my each sleeve of my coat. And back then they kind of just kind of frisked you as you went through security before you got actually to the gate. So I'm walking up to get frisked and I throw my hands up in the air like, yeah, frisk me. And boom, boom, both beers fall out. Totally busted. So they're like, and I just walked on through. So then we get in the game and no surprise here, we sneak into the club level and the game goes overtime and I go out to get a beer. I guess they don't do last call when you're in the club section. So I go out, I get a beer, I come back and I'm like, where did Hal go? And so I watch overtime. The Steelers win it on a walk-off long touchdown pass from Ben to, I think it was Hines Ward. It might have been Santonio Holmes.
The last game of 2006, that was Santonio Holmes. Yeah, that was
Santonio Holmes.
And that was like, that was the week after the long snapper debacle in Denver. Bring us full circle here with Brad St. Louis.
Either one of those games would have sent him to the playoffs. And so I'm sitting there in the rain, fairly hammered, wondering where my friend Hal went. And turns out I was so hammered, I went to the wrong section because they weren't really our seats. And so he was sitting one aisle over from me, wondering where I am. And I'm sitting the next aisle over wondering where he is. And we meet back up and got a ride back to his house, rallied, and had a proper New Year's Eve.
I love it. No, you have no shame, and I enjoy every minute of this. And of course, you had exactly the right beers that you needed, and end up in the club seats. Although I don't know how that, you know what, those were pretty full stadiums back in those days. That had to have been a little bit of a challenge to get into the club level. Usually, there's no entrance you can't sneak into, especially at a half-empty Bengals game. But the 06 season, now big game to close the year. I'm guessing that might have been one of your more challenging sneaks.
Yeah, Steelers and playoffs on the line. It actually wasn't that. I'm going to get myself in trouble. I don't want to say how I got in there, but it wasn't that. It was more challenging to get Hal in. I had a way to get in, but I was able to sneak Hal in.
Why can't you say that? You have no shame.
Okay. So back then I was writing for Bengals Report and I had season credentials. But Bengals Report only published every other week. So that was a week we weren't publishing. So I used my press pass to get into the club level. And then once I was in there, I grabbed somebody else's club ticket, went out and got Hal and then brought him in.
You shouldn't have said that.
I know. PJ's going to kill me.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this week's edition of Hear That Podcast Growlin'. We, of course, will be back on Thursday. We will be talking with our good friends in Dallas. Jay, you're about to have that convo here in a little bit, aren't you?
I am. I'm going to talk to John Machada and see what's going on, all things non-Dak Prescott. But, of course, we'll talk Dak Prescott, too.
Oh, the sky is a-fallen in Dallas. There is zero question about that. So look forward to hearing from him on Thursday, plus more from Inside the Locker Room and everything we gather over the next couple of days down at Paycor Stadium. So thanks, everybody, for listening or watching, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.